OJB's podcast, 20 February 2008, The God Delusion. I recently finished reading Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion. Dawkins is one of the world's most prominent atheists and critics of religion, and especially creationism, so it was certain that I'd find his book interesting. In fact, it was one of those rare books I actually made notes about as I read, and I thought I might like to share some of my observations and conclusions here. On one of the first pages was a quote from Einstein which explains his concept of God. He said, "I don't try to imagine a personal God. It suffices to stand in awe at the structure of the world insofar as it allows our inadequate senses to appreciate it." Clearly, the claim by some religious people that Einstein believed in God is very misleading, if not outright wrong. In a discussion of the efficacy of prayer, Dawkins cites a study run by Herbert Benson, a believer, which was funded by the Templeton Foundation, a pro-religious organization, which monitored 1,802 patients and found those who knew they were prayed for had more complications. I know that other prayer researchers had contradictory results. In fact, the research as a whole gives widely varying results, which usually indicates there is no real effect. Dawkins is often told he should keep out of religion because he's not a theologian. I have recently been reaching the conclusion that theology is often a rather unintellectual pursuit, perhaps on a par with the study of UFOs. When you study something which has no basis in reality, this is perhaps inevitable. My conclusion on this is supported by Thomas Jefferson, who wrote, "A professorship of theology should have no place in our institution." Some people who try to defend the literal truth of Jesus' life quote the stories of large numbers of people witnessing key events in his life, but Dawkins points out that mass visions aren't unusual. In 1917 at Fatima, Portugal, 70,000 pilgrims saw the sun tear itself from the heavens and come crashing down on the multitudes. Should we take the story literally? And if we don't, why take the Bible stories literally? It's beyond doubt that the Old Testament is full of fake stories, but what about the New? To demonstrate the absurd inconsistency of the New Testament, the book mentions an Old Testament prophecy, Micah 5:2, which said Christ would be born in Bethlehem. John's Gospel says he was surprised he was not born there. Matthew has Mary and Joseph in Bethlehem all along, and they moved to Nazareth much later. Luke has Mary and Joseph live in Nazareth, and they go to Bethlehem for a census, which is the city of David, who lived there 1,000 years earlier, which makes no sense. Obviously, neither testament can be trusted. Also in reference to this prophecy, which is probably the most important and prominent one in Christianity, Dawkins says that Matthew traces Joseph's descent from David by 28 generations, but Luke mentions 41. There is little overlap between them. If Jesus was born from a virgin, what part did Joseph play in all this anyway? Obviously, it's just all made up to fulfill the prophecy. How can anyone be so stupid to believe this stuff? What sort of contribution do Christians make to modern civilization? Not very much. As society is built on science, so how much contribution do Christians make to science? A website listing scientific Nobel Prize-winning Christians mentions 6 out of a total of 700. But on closer examination, it appears that 4 of those didn't get a Nobel Prize at all, and 1 is probably not a believer. A study in Nature in 1998 showed 7% of the members of the National Academy of Sciences in the US believed in a personal God. Both of these only show the elite members of the scientific community, but clearly Christians are hugely underrepresented there. Perhaps the lack of Christians in the top ranks of science is because they aren't too bright. A meta-analysis of intelligence and religiosity published by Mensa in 2002 showed 39 out of 43 studies showed an inverse relationship between religious belief and intelligence. It seems that if you're a believer, you're probably also a bit thick. I'm sorry, but I derive a sort of perverse pleasure watching creationists, or their cousins, intelligent designers, being torn to shreds by scientists. Dawkins quotes the case of Michael Behe, who was shown to be totally clueless in the famous Dover trial. He claimed in 1996 that science would never find an evolutionary pathway for the immune system. In the trial, he was shown 58 peer-reviewed papers, 9 books, and several textbook chapters which described this path. His only response was to insist that wasn't enough, but he then admitted he hadn't even read most of them. Be his credibility? Zero. What about the origin of the universe and the fact that the physical constants seem fine-tuned for life? This is one thing that many scientists find mystifying. Dawkins points out that this doesn't support God, because explaining a complex, fine-tuned universe as the result of an even more complex God just moves the question back one step. An interesting possibility which might explain the fine-tuned universe comes from some work by Lee Smolin. He has come up with a universe evolution theory which claims universes are born in black holes. Fundamental constants of the new universes are slightly different from the ones they come from. Only universes which last a long time and make stars, and then black holes, can make more universes, so a natural selection occurs. This is Darwinism on the scale of the whole universe. I freely admit this is highly speculative, but it is a start on explaining one of the greatest mysteries in science. Christians have been waiting for the return of Jesus for 2,000 years now. They are obviously convinced he will eventually arrive, but other cults have similar beliefs, and we can see them developing. A cargo cult believes John Frum will return on February 15, but they don't know which year. After 19 years, nothing has happened, but they still continue waiting. Okay, so 19 years isn't quite the same as 2,000, but it's easy to see how these ideas might develop. Many people believe that religion is necessary to establish an objective morality that people can follow. But the famous Hauser experiments, which studied moral right and wrong, found a basic moral sense is universal, including for the Kuna tribe, who have no religion and little contact with Westerners. The details of the individual moralities differ slightly, but the basics are the same. A set of tests conducted with the well-known philosopher Peter Singer found no difference between the morality of atheists and religious people. Obviously, the teachings of Jesus aren't necessary for people to be moral. In the US, religious belief and political affiliation are closely linked, so we would expect to see greater morality in religious and politically conservative areas. But the opposite is true. Of 25 cities with the lowest crime, 62% are in Democratic areas. Of the 25 most dangerous cities, 76% are Republican. Republican states represent 12 out of 12 with the highest burglary, 24 out of 29 with the highest theft, and 17 out of 22 with the highest murder. Many religious people quote Blaise Pascal's famous wager, which says that it's safest to assume God exists, because if he does and we ignore him, then we're in trouble. And if he doesn't, we're no worse off. But they don't tend to mention this Pascal quote so much. Men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from religious conviction. History seems to indicate this is true. Most people think the teachings of Jesus are quite positive, but evolutionary anthropologist John Hartung has studied the origin of the texts and believes the sweeping statements like everyone being able to be saved and everyone should treat their neighbours well only really refers to Jews. This may or may not be true, we're never likely to know, but the positive aspects of the Christian message shouldn't disguise the more negative aspects of it, and the fact that many other philosophers and teachers have had similar messages both before and after Jesus. Many Christians believe there is something special about the rules presented in the Bible, but Dawkins points out that anyone create a list is at least as good as those in the Bible, and a lot more relevant to our modern society. The Bible is silent on topics such as environmentalism and women's rights. A search of the internet for atheist sites will show several lists which are far more attractive than the Bible's laws. The moral zeitgeist shows inevitable change over time and becomes more progressive, despite small setbacks such as George Bush. And this progress is not dependent on a particular religion. For example, Martin Luther King used Christian ideas to force change, but Gandhi, who was a Hindu, but also accepted other religion, used similar tactics. When discussing religion and morality, it is almost inevitable that Hitler's name will be mentioned. Christians will claim he was an atheist, and atheists will claim he was a Christian. Either way, he cynically manipulated whatever belief system he followed. I will point this out, though. Hitler's biographer said he exterminated the Jews without any problems because he was still a member of the Catholic Church, which taught Jews were the killers of Christ. As science becomes more important and discovers more about the world, many believers try to say that the Bible and science are compatible. An American geologist, Kurt Wise, went through the Bible and removed the parts that contradicted science. There was so little left that he found the two couldn't be reconciled. Unfortunately for him, he ignored the scientific facts and went with religion instead. But the reality is you can't logically believe both. In his 1954 book, Why God Persists, Robert Hind quotes a Gallup poll from the US. It showed that 75% of Protestants and Catholics couldn't even name an Old Testament prophet, and more than 67% didn't know who preached the Sermon on the Mount. Also, a large number thought Moses was an apostle of Jesus. Clearly, the majority of Christians really know effectively nothing about their own religion. If they're so ignorant, but still believe, does that mean the old argument that Christianity is true because so many people believe it can be sustained? Obviously not. I've often heard Christians claim there is no such thing as an atheist because they all believe in a God if they are honest with themselves. I claim the opposite, that most Christians really know their beliefs aren't true and just continue believing through habit or for convenience. What about evidence? In a survey of attitudes of atheists in the US, 100% wanted no contact with religious hospital staff in the event of their imminent death. That suggests to me there is no deep hidden belief. But the percentage of Christians who are prepared to accept scientific medicine? Just about all of them. I think that shows that people really know what works and what doesn't. Probably my favourite quote from the book was this, from the philosopher Wittgenstein. When asked why people originally thought the sun orbited the earth, most people will say because it looks like it does. The question then is, what would it look like if the earth orbited the sun? Think about it.